but I keep feeling worse and worse all the time. So maybe I sneak up to her teepee in the dark and wait till she comes out. Maybe I just wait there all night and don't get any sleep at all, and she does not come out. Then I feel sicker than ever about her. Maybe I hide in the brush by a spring where she sometimes goes to get water. And when she comes by, if no one is looking, then I jump out and hold her and just make her listen to me. If she likes me too, I can tell that from the way she acts, for she is very bashful and maybe will not say a word or even look at me the first time. So I let her go, and then maybe I sneak around until I can see her father alone, and I tell him how many horses I could give him for his beautiful girl, and by now I am feeling so sick that maybe I would give him all the horses in the world if I had them. Well, this young man I am telling about was called High Horse, and there was a girl in the village who looked so beautiful to him that he was just sick all over from thinking about her so much, and he was getting sicker all the time. The girl was very shy, and her parents thought a great deal of her because they were not young anymore, and this was the only child they had. So they watched her all day long, and they fixed it so that she would be safe at night too when they were asleep. They thought so much of her that they had made a rawhide bed for her to sleep in, and after they knew that High Horse was sneaking around after her, they took rawhide thongs and tied the girl in bed at night so that nobody could steal her when they were asleep, for they were not sure but that their girl might really want to be stolen. Well, after High Horse had been sneaking around a good while and hiding and waiting for the girl and getting sicker all the time, he finally caught her alone and made her talk to him. Then he found out that she liked him, maybe a little. Of course, this did not make him feel well. It made him sicker than ever, but now he felt as brave as a bison bull. And so he went right up to her father and said he loved the girl so much that he would give two good horses for her, one of them young, and the other one not so very old. But the old man just waved his hand, meaning for High Horse to go away and quit talking foolishness like that. High Horse was feeling sicker than ever about it, but there was another young fellow who said that he would loan High Horse two ponies, and when he got some more horses, why, he could just give them back for the ones he had borrowed. Then High Horse went back to the old man and said that he would give four horses for the girl, two of them young, and the other two hardly old at all. But the old man just waved his hand and would not say anything. So High Horse sneaked around until he could talk to the girl again, and he asked her to run away with him. He told her he thought that he would just fall over and die if she did not. But she said she would not do that. She wanted to be bought like a fine woman. You see, she thought a great deal of herself, too. That made High Horse feel so very sick that he could not eat a bite, and he went around with his head hanging down and thought he might just fall down and die any time. Red Deer was another young fellow, and he and High Horse were great comrades, always doing things together. Red Horse saw how High Horse was acting, and he said, "Cousin, what is the matter? Are you sick in the belly? You look as though you're going to die." Then High Horse told Red Deer how it was, and said he thought he could not stay alive much longer if he could not marry the girl pretty quick. Red Deer thought about it a while, and then he said, "Cousin, I have a plan, and if you are man enough to do as I tell you, then everything will be all right. She will not run away with you. Her old man will not take four horses, and four horses are all you can get. You must steal her and run away with her. Then after a while you can come back and the old man cannot do anything because she will be your woman. Probably she wants you to steal her anyway." So they planned what High Horse had to do. And he said he loved the girl so much that he was man enough to do anything Red Deer or anybody else could think up. So this is what they did. That night late, they sneaked up to the girl's teepee and waited until it sounded inside as though the old man and old woman and the girl were sound asleep. Then High Horse crawled under the teepee with a knife. He had to cut the rawhide thongs first, and then Red Deer, who was pulling up stakes around that side of the teepee, was going to help drag the girl outside and gag her. After that, High Horse would put her across his pony in front of him and hurry out of there and be happy the rest of his life. When High Horse had crawled inside, he felt so nervous that he could hear his heart drumming, and it seemed so loud he felt sure it would waken the old folks. But it did not, and after a while he began cutting the thongs. Every time he cut one, it made a pop and nearly scared him to death. But he was getting along all right, and all the thongs were cut down as far as the girl's thighs, when he became so nervous that his knife slipped and struck the girl. She gave out a big, loud yell. Then the old folks jumped up and yelled too. By this time High Horse was outside, and he and Red Deer were running away like antelope. The old man and some other people chased the young men, but they got away in the dark, and no one knew who it was. Well, if you ever wanted a beautiful girl, you will know how sick High Horse was now. It was very bad the way he felt, and it looked as though he would starve even if he did not drop over dead sometime. Red Deer kept thinking about this, and after a few days he went to High Horse and said, "Cousin, take courage. I have another plan, and I am sure if you are man enough, we can steal her this time." And High Horse said, "I am man enough to do anything anybody can think up, if only I could get that girl." So this is what they did. They went away from the village alone, and Red Deer made High Horse strip naked. Then he painted High Horse solid white all over, and after that he painted black stripes all over the white and put black rings around High Horse's eyes. High Horse looked terrible. He looked so terrible that when Red Deer was through painting and took a good look at what he had done, he said it scared him even a little. "Now," Red Deer said, "if you get caught again, everybody will be so scared they will think you are a bad spirit, and they will be afraid to chase you." So when the night was getting old and everybody was sound asleep, they crawled back to the girl's teepee. High Horse crawled in with his knife as before, and Red Deer waited outside ready to drag the girl out and gag her when High Horse had all the thongs cut. High Horse crept up to the girl's bed and began cutting at the thongs, but he kept thinking, "If they see me, they will shoot me because I look so terrible." The girl was restless and kept squirming around in bed, and when a thong was cut, it popped. So High Horse worked very slowly and carefully. He must have made some noise, for suddenly the old woman awoke and said to her old man, "Old man, wake up, there is somebody in this teepee." But the old man was sleepy and didn't want to be bothered. He said, "Of course there is somebody in the teepee. Go to sleep, don't bother me." And then he snored some more. But High Horse was so scared by now that he lay very still and as flat to the ground as he could. Now, you see, he had not been sleeping very well for a long time because he was so sick about the girl, and while he was lying there waiting for the old woman to snore, he just forgot everything, even how beautiful the girl was. Red Deer, who was lying outside ready to do his part, wondered and wondered what had happened in there, but he did not dare call out to High Horse. After a while, the day began to break, and Red Deer had to leave with the two ponies he had staked there for his comrade and girl, or somebody would see him. So he left. Now when it was getting light in the teepee, the girl awoke, and the first thing she saw was a terrible animal, all white with black stripes on it, lying asleep beside her bed. So she screamed, and then the old woman screamed, and the old man yelled. High Horse jumped up, scared almost to death, and he nearly knocked the teepee down getting out of there. People were coming running from all over the village with guns and bows and axes, and everybody was yelling. By now High Horse was running so fast that he hardly touched the ground at all, and he looked so terrible that the people fled from him and let him run. Some braves wanted to shoot him, but the other said he might be some sacred being and it would bring bad trouble to kill him. High Horse made for the river that was near, and in among the brush he found a hollow tree and dived into it. After a while some braves came there, and he could hear them saying that it was some bad spirit that had come out of the water and had gone back in again. That morning the people were ordered to break camp and move away from there. So they did, while High Horse was hiding in his hollow tree. Now Red Deer had been watching all this from his own teepee, and trying to look as he were as much surprised and scared as all the others. So when the camp moved, he sneaked back to where he had seen his comrade disappear. When he was down there in the brush, he called, and High Horse answered because he knew his friend's voice. They washed off the paint from High Horse and sat down on the river bank to talk about their troubles. High Horse said he never would go back to the village as long as he lived, and he did not care what happened to him now. He said he was going to go on the warpath all by himself. Red Deer said, "No, cousin, you are not going to go on the warpath alone, because I am going with you." So Red Deer got everything ready, and at night they started out on the warpath all alone. After several days they came to a crow camp just about sundown, and when it was dark they sneaked up to where the crow horses were grazing, killed the horse guard, who was not thinking about enemies because he thought all the Lakotas were far away, and drove off about 100 horses. They got a big start because all the crow horses stampeded, and it was probably morning before the crow warriors could catch any horses to ride. Red Deer and High Horse fled with their herd 3 days and nights before they reached the village of their people. Then they drove the whole herd right into the village and up in front of the girl's teepee. The old man was there, and High Horse called out to him and asked if he thought maybe that would be enough horses for his girl. The old man did not wave him away that time. It was not the horses that he wanted. What he wanted was a son who was a real man and good for something. So High Horse got his girl after all, and I think he deserved her. Chapter 7 Wasichus in the Hills. It was the next summer, when I was 11 years old, that the first sign of a new trouble came to us. Our band had been camping on Split Toe Creek in the Black Hills, and from there we moved to Spring Creek, then to Rapid Creek, where it comes out into the prairie. That evening, just before sunset, a big thundercloud came up from the west, and just before the wind struck, there were clouds of split-tailed swallows flying all above us. And it was like a part of my vision, and it made me feel queer. The boys tried to hit the swallows with stones, and it hurt me to see them doing this, but I could not tell them. I got a stone and acted as though I were going to throw, but I did not. The swallows seemed holy. Nobody hit one, and when I thought about this, I knew that of course they could not. The next day some of the people were building a sweat teepee for a medicine man by the name of Chips, who was going to perform a ceremony and had to be purified first. They say he was the first man who made a sacred ornament for our great chief, Crazy Horse. While they were heating the stones for the sweat teepee, some boys asked me to go out with them to shoot squirrels. We went out, and when I was about to shoot at one, I felt very uneasy all at once. So I sat down, feeling queer, and wondered about it. While I sat there, I heard a voice that said, "Go at once, go home." I told the boys we must go home at once, and we all hurried. When we got back, everybody was excited, breaking camp, catching the ponies, and loading the drags. And I heard that while Chips was in the sweat teepee, a voice had told him that the band must flee at once because something was going to happen there. It was nearly sundown when we started, and we fled all that night on the back trail toward Spring Creek, and down that creek to the South Fork of the Good River. I rode most of the night in a pony drag because I got too sleepy to stay on a horse. We camped at Good River in the morning, but we stayed only long enough to eat. Then we fled again upstream all day long until we reached the mouth of Horse Creek. We were going to stay there, but scouts came to us and said that many soldiers had come into the Black Hills, And that was what Chips saw while he was in the sweat teepee. So we hurried on in the night toward Smoky Earth River, and when we got there I woke up and it was daybreak. We camped a while to eat, and then went up the Smoky Earth, two camps, to Robinson, for we were afraid of the soldiers up there. Afterward I learned it was Pahuska, General Custer, who had led his soldiers into the Black Hills that summer to see what he could find. He had no right to go there, because all that country was ours. Also, the Wasichus made a treaty with Red Cloud that said it would be ours as long as the grass should grow and water flow. Later I learned, too, that Pahuska had found there much of the yellow metal that makes Wasichus crazy, and that was what made the bad trouble, just as it did before when the 100 were rubbed out. Our people knew there was yellow metal in little chunks up there, but they did not bother with it because it was not good for anything. We stayed all winter at the soldiers' town, and all the while the bad trouble was coming fast, for in the fall we heard that some Wasichus had come from the Missouri River to dig in the Black Hills for the yellow metal, because Pahuska had told about it with a voice that went everywhere. Later he got rubbed out for doing that. The people talked about this all winter. Crazy Horse was in the Powder River country, and Sitting Bull was somewhere north of the hills. Our people at the soldiers' town thought we ought to get together and do something. Red Cloud's people said that the soldiers had gone in there to keep the diggers out, but we, who were only visiting, did not believe it. We called Red Cloud's people hangs around the fort, and our people said they were standing up for the Wasichus, and if we did not do something, we should lose the Black Hills. In the spring, when I was 12 years old, more soldiers with many wagons came from the soldiers' town at the mouth of the Laramie River and went into the hills. There was much talk all summer, and in the moon of making fat there was a sun dance there at the soldiers' town to give the people strength, but not many took part, maybe because everyone was so excited talking about the Black Hills. I remember two men who danced together. One had lost a leg in the Battle of the 100 slain, and one had lost an eye in the attacking of the wagons, so they had only 3 eyes and 3 legs between them to dance with. We boys went down to the creek while they were sun dancing, and got some elm leaves that we chewed up and threw on the dancers while they were all dressed up and trying to look their best. We even did this to some of the older people, and nobody got angry, because everybody was supposed to be in a good humor and to show their endurance in every kind of way. So they had to stand teasing, too. I will tell about a big sun dance later when we come to it. In the moon, when the calves grow hair, there was a big council with the Wasichus on Smoky Earth River at the mouth of White Clay Creek. I can remember the council, but I did not understand much of it then. Many of the Lakotas were there, also Shaelas and Blue Clouds, but Crazy Horse and Sitting Bull stayed away. In the middle of the circle there was a shade made of canvas. Under this the counselors sat and talked, and all around them there was a crowd of people on foot and horseback. They talked and talked for days, but it was just like blowing wind in the end. I asked my father what they were talking about in there. He told me that the grandfather at Washington wanted to lease the Black Hills so that the Wasichus could dig yellow metal, and that the chief of the soldiers had said that if we did not do this, the Black Hills would be just like melting snow held in our hands, because the Wasichus would take that country anyway. It made me sad to hear this. It was such a good place to play, and the people were always happy in that country. Also, I thought of my vision, and how the spirits took me there to the center of the world. After the council, we heard that the creeks of Wasichus were flowing into the hills and becoming rivers, and that they were already making towns up there. It looked like bad trouble coming, so our band broke camp and started out to join Crazy Horse on Powder River. We camped on Horsehead Creek, then on the Warbonnet, after we crossed the old Wasichus road that made the trouble that time when the 100 were rubbed out. Grass was growing on it. Then we camped at Sage Creek, then on the Beaver, then on Driftwood Creek, and came again to the plain of pine trees at the edge of the hills. The nights were sharp now, but the days were clear and still, and while we were camping there I went into the hills alone and sat a long while under a tree. I thought maybe my vision would come back and tell me how I could save that country for my people, but I could not see anything clear. This made me sad, but something happened a few days later that made me feel good. We had gone over to Taking the Crow Horses Creek, and there found many bison and made plenty of meat and tanned many hides for winter. In our band there was a man by the name of Fat, who was always talking about how fast his horse could run. One day while we were camping there, I told Fat my pony could run faster than his could, and he laughed at me and said that only crows and coyotes would think my pony was any good. I asked him what he would give me if my pony could beat his, and he said he would give me some black medicine. So we ran, and I got the black medicine. All the while we were running, I thought about the white wing of the wind that the second grandfather of my vision gave me, and maybe that power went into my pony's legs. On Kills Himself Creek, we made more meat and hides and were ready to join Crazy Horse's camp on the Powder. There was some Hang Around the Fort people with us, and when they saw that we were going to join Crazy Horse, they left us and started back to the soldier's town. They were afraid there might be trouble, and they knew Crazy Horse would fight, so they wanted to be safe with the Wasichus. We did not like them very much. We had no advisors, because we were just a little band, and when we were moving, the boys could ride anywhere. One day, while we were heading for Powder River, I was riding ahead with Steele's horses, another boy my age, and we saw some footprints of somebody going somewhere. We followed the footprints, and there was a knoll beside a creek where Lakota was lying. We got off and looked at him, and he was dead. His name was Root of the Tail, and he was going over to Tongue River to see his relatives when he died. He was very old and ready to die, so he just lay down and died right there before he saw his relatives again. After a while, we came to the village on Powder River and went into camp at the downstream end. I was anxious to see my cousin Crazy Horse again, for now it had begun to look like bad trouble coming. Everybody talked about him more than ever, and he seemed greater than before. Also, I was getting older. Of course, I had seen him now and then ever since I could remember, and had heard stories of the brave things he did. I remember the story of how he and his brother were out alone on horseback, and a big band of crows attacked them, so that they had to run. And while they were riding hard, with all those crows after them, Crazy Horse heard his brother call out, and when he looked back, his brother's horse was down, and the crows were almost on him. And they told how Crazy Horse charged back right into the crows and fought them back with only a bow and arrows, then took his brother up behind him and got away. It was his sacred power that made the crows afraid of him when he charged. And the people told stories of when he was a boy and used to be around with the older Hump all the time. Hump was not young anymore at the time, and he was a very great warrior, maybe the greatest we ever had until then. They say people used to wonder at the boy and the old man always being together, but I think Hump knew Crazy Horse would be a great man and wanted to teach him everything. Crazy Horse's father was my father's cousin, and there were no chiefs in our family before Crazy Horse, but there were holy men, and he became a chief because of the power he got in a vision when he was a boy. When I was a man, my father told me something about that vision. Of course, he did not know all of it, but he said that Crazy Horse dreamed and went into the world where there is nothing but the spirits of all things. That is the real world that is behind this one, and everything we see here is something like a shadow from that world. He was on his horse in that world, and the horse and himself on it, and the trees and the grass and the stones, and everything were made of spirit, and nothing was hard, and everything seemed to float. His horse was standing still there, and yet it danced around like a horse made only of shadow, and that is how he got his name, which does not mean that his horse was crazy or wild, but that in his vision it danced around in that queer way. It was that vision that gave him his great power, for when he went into a fight he had only to think of that world to be in it again, so that he could go through anything and not be hurt. Until he was murdered by the Wasichus at the soldier's town on White River, he was only wounded twice, once by accident, and both times by someone of his own people, when he was not expecting trouble and was not thinking, never, by an enemy. He was 15 years old when he was wounded by accident, and the other time was when he was a young man and another man was jealous of him because the man's wife liked Crazy Horse. They used to say, too, that he carried a sacred stone with him, like the one he had seen in some vision, and that when he was in danger the stone always got very heavy and protected him somehow. That, they used to say, was the reason no horse he ever rode lasted very long. I do not know about this. Maybe people only thought it. But it is a fact that he never kept one horse long. They wore out. I think it was only the power of his great vision that made him great. Now and then he would notice me and speak to me before this, and sometimes he would have the crier call me into his teepee to eat with him. Then he would say things to tease me, but I would not say anything back because I think I was a little afraid of him. I was not afraid that he would hurt me. I was just afraid. Everybody felt that way about him, for he was a queer man and would go about the village without noticing people or saying anything. In his own teepee he would joke, and when he was on the warpath with a small party, he would joke to make his warriors feel good. But all around the village he hardly ever noticed anybody, except little children. All the Lakotas liked to dance and sing, but he never joined a dance, and they say nobody ever heard him sing. But everybody liked him, and they would do anything he wanted or go anywhere he said. He was a small man among the Lakotas, and he was slender and had a thin face, and his eyes looked through things, and he always seemed to be thinking hard about something. He never wanted to have many things for himself, and did not have many ponies like a chief. They say that when game was scarce and the people were hungry, he would not eat at all. He was a queer man. Maybe he was always part way into that world of his vision. He was a very great man, and I think if the Wasichus had not murdered him down there, maybe we should still have the Black Hills and be happy. They could not have killed him in battle. They had to lie to him and murder him, and he was only about 30 years old when he died. One day after we had camped there on Powder River, I went upstream to see him again, but his teepee was empty, and he was gone somewhere, maybe with a war party against the Crows, for we were close to them now and had to look out for them all the time. Later I did see him. He put his arm across my shoulder and took me into his teepee, and we sat down together. I do not remember what he said, but I know he did not say much, and he did not tease me. Maybe he was thinking about the trouble coming. We did not stay together there very long, but scattered out and camped in different places so that the people and the ponies would all have plenty. Crazy Horse kept his village on Powder River with about 100 teepees, and our band made camp on the Tongue. We built a corral of poles for the horses at night and herded them all day, because the Crows were great horse thieves, and we had to be careful. The women chopped and stripped cottonwood trees during the day and gave the bark to the horses at night. The horses liked it, and it made them sleek and fat. Beside the mouth of the corral there was a teepee for the horse guard, and one night Crow Nose was staying there, and his wife was with them. He had a hole in the teepee so that he could look through. After a while he got very sleepy, so he woke his wife and told her to get up and watch while he had a little rest. By and by she saw something dark moving slowly in the snow out there. So she woke her husband and whispered, "Old man, you better get up, for I think I see something." So Crow Nose got up and peeped out and saw a man moving around the corral in the starlight looking for the best horse. Crow Nose told his wife to keep her eye at the hole and let him know when the man was coming out with a horse, and he lay down at the opening of the teepee with the muzzle of his gun sticking out of the flap. By and by they could hear the bar lifted at the mouth of the corral. When his wife touched him, Crow Nose thrust his head outside and saw the man just getting on a horse to ride away. He was black against the sky, so Crow Nose shot him, and the shot woke the whole camp so that many came running with guns and coup sticks. Yellow Shirt was the first to count coup on the dead Crow, but many followed. A man who has killed an enemy must not touch him, for he has already had the honor of killing. He must let another count coup. When I got there to see, a pile of coup sticks was lying beside the Crow, and the women had cut him up with axes and scattered him around. It was horrible. Then the people built a fire right there beside the crow, and we had a kill dance. Men, women, and children danced right in the middle of the night, and they all sang about Crow Nose, who had killed, and Yellow Shirt, who had counted the first coup. Then it was daylight, and the crier told us we would move camp to the place where Root of the Tail died. Crow Nose, dressed up for war, painted his face black and rode the horse the enemy had tried to steal. When the men paint their faces black, the women all rejoice and make the tremolo, because it means their men are going to kill enemies. When we camped again, one of Red Cloud's loafers who had started back for the soldiers' town because they were afraid there might be trouble came in and said the crows had killed all his party but himself while they were sleeping, and he had escaped because he was out scouting. During the winter, runners came from the Wasichus and told us we must come into the soldiers' town right away or there would be bad trouble. But it was foolish to say that, because it was very cold and many of our people and ponies would have died in the snow. Also, we were in our own country and were doing no harm. Late in the moon of the dark red calves, there was a big thaw, and our little band started for the soldiers' town, but it was very cold again before we got there. Crazy Horse stayed with about 100 teepees on powder, and in the middle of the moon of the snow blind, something bad happened there. It was just daybreak. There was a blizzard, and it was very cold. The people were sleeping. Suddenly, there were many shots and horses galloping through the village. It was the cavalry of the Wasichus, and they were yelling and shooting and riding their horses against the teepees. All the people rushed out and ran, because they were not awake yet, and they were frightened. The soldiers killed as many women and children and men as they could while the people were running toward a bluff. Then they set fire to some of the teepees and knocked the others down. But when the people were on the side of the bluff, Crazy Horse said something, and all the warriors began singing the death song and charged back upon the soldiers. And the soldiers ran, driving many of the people's ponies ahead of them. Crazy Horse followed them all day with a band of warriors, and that night he took all the stolen ponies away from them and some of their own horses and brought them all back to the village. These people were in their own country and were doing no harm. They only wanted to be let alone. We did not hear of this until quite a while afterward, but at the soldiers' town we heard enough to make us paint our faces black. Chapter 8. The Fight with Three Stars. We stayed at the soldiers' town this time until the grass was good in the moon when the ponies shed. Then my father told me we were going back to Crazy Horse and that we were going to have to fight from then on, because there was no other way to keep our country. He said that Red Cloud was a cheap man and wanted to sell the Black Hills to the Wasichus, that Spotted Tail and other chiefs were cheap men too, and that the hang-around the fort people were all cheap and would stand up for the Wasichus. My aunt, who was living at the soldiers' town, must have felt the way we did, because when we were breaking camp she gave me a six-shooter, like the soldiers had, and told me I was a man now. I was 13 years old and not very big for my age, but I thought I should have to be a man anyway. We boys had practiced endurance, and we were all good riders, and I could shoot straight with either a bow or a gun. We were a small band, and we started in the night and traveled fast. Before we got to Warbonnet Creek, some Shayelas joined us because their hearts were bad like ours, and they were going to the same place. Later I heard that many small bands were doing the same thing and coming together from everywhere. Just after we camped on the Warbonnet, our scouts saw a wagon train of Wasichus coming up the old road that caused the trouble before. They had oxen hitched to their wagons, and they were part of the river of Wasichus that was running into the Black Hills. They shot at our scouts, so we decided we would attack them. When the war party was getting ready, I made up my mind that small as I was, I might as well die there and if I did, maybe I'd be known. I told Jumping Horse, a boy about my age, that I was going along to die, and he said he would too. So we went, and so did Crab and some other boys. When the Wasichus saw us coming, they put their wagons in a circle and got inside with their oxen. We rode around and around them in a wide circle that kept getting narrower. That is the best way to fight, because it is hard to hit ponies running fast in a circle. And sometimes there would be two circles, one inside the other, going fast in opposite directions, which made us still harder to hit. The cavalry of the Wasichus did not know how to fight. They kept together, and when they came on, you could hardly miss them. We kept apart in the circle. While we were riding around the wagons, we were hanging low on the outside of the ponies and shooting under their necks. This was not easy to do, even when your legs were long, and mine were not yet very long. But I stuck tight and shot with the six-shooter my aunt gave me. Before we started the attack, I was afraid. But Big Man told us we were brave boys, and I soon got over being frightened. The Wasichus shot fast at us from behind the wagons, and I could hear bullets whizzing, but they did not hit any of us. I kept thinking of my vision, and maybe that helped. I do not know whether we killed any Wasichus or not. We rode around several times, and once we got close, but there were not many of us, and we could not get at the Wasichus behind their wagons, so we went away. This was my first fight. When we were back at camp, some Shiela warriors told us that we were very brave boys, and that we were going to have plenty of fighting. We were traveling very fast now, for we were in danger and wanted to get back to Crazy Horse. He had moved over west to the Rosebud River, and the people were gathering there. As we traveled, we met other little bands all going in the same place, until there were a good many of us all mixed up before we got there. Red Cloud's son was with us, but Red Cloud stayed at the soldiers' town. When we came to the ridge on this side of the Rosebud River, we could see the valley full of teepees, and the ponies could not be counted. Many, many people were there. Oglalas, Hunkpapas, Minikanjus, Sansarks, Blackfeet, Bruels, Isantis, Ihanktuana, and also many Shaelas and Blue Clouds had come to fight with us. The village was long, and you could not see all the camps with one look. The scouts came out to meet us and bring us in, and everybody rejoiced that we had come. Great men were there, Crazy Horse and Big Road of the Oglalas, Sitting Bull and Gall and Black Moon and Crow King of the Hunkpapas, Spotted Eagle of the Sansarks, and Younger Hump and Fastbull of the Minikanju, Dull Knife and Ice Bear of the Shaelas, Ink Paduta with the Isanti and the Ihanktuana. Great men were there, and all those people and horses. Hechatualo. About the middle of the moon of making fat, the whole village moved a little way up the river to a good place for a sun dance. The valley was wide and flat there, and we camped in a great oval with the river flowing through it, and in the center they built the bower of branches in a circle for the dancers, with the opening of it to the east whence comes the light. Scouts were sent out in all directions to guard the sacred place. Sitting Bull, who was the greatest medicine man of the nation at that time, had charge of this dance to purify the people and to give them power and endurance. It was held in the moon of fatness because it is the time when the sun is highest and the growing power of the world is strongest. I will tell you how it was done. First, a holy man was sent out all alone to find the Wagachan, the holy tree that should stand in the middle of the dancing circle. Nobody dared follow to see what he did or hear the sacred words he would say there. And when he had found the right tree, he would tell the people, and they would come there singing with flowers all over them. Then when they gathered about the holy tree, some women who were bearing children would dance around it because the spirit of the sun loves all fruitfulness. After that, a warrior, who had done some very brave deed that summer, struck the tree, counting coup upon it, And when he had done this, he had to give gifts to those who had least of everything. And the braver he was, the more he gave away. After this, a band of young maidens came singing, with sharp axes in their hands. And they had to be so good that nobody there could say anything against him, or that any man had ever known them. And it was the duty of anyone who knew anything bad about any of them to tell it right before all the people there and prove it. But if anybody lied, it was very bad for them. The maidens chopped the tree down and trimmed its branches off. Then chiefs, who were sons of chiefs, carried the sacred tree home, stopping four times on the way, one for each season, giving thanks for each. Now when the holy tree had been brought home but was not yet set up in the center of the dancing place, mounted warriors gathered around the circle of the village, and at a signal they all charged inward upon the center where the tree would stand, each trying to be the first to touch the sacred place. And whoever was the first could not be killed in war that year. When they all came together in the middle, it was like a battle, with the ponies rearing and screaming in a big dust and the men shouting and wrestling and trying to throw each other off the horses. After that, there was a big feast and plenty for everybody to eat, and a big dance just as though we had won a victory. The next day, the tree was planted in the center by holy men who sang sacred songs and made sacred vows to the spirit. And the next morning, nursing mothers brought their holy little ones to lay them at the bottom of the tree, so that the sons would be brave men, and the daughters the mothers of brave men. The holy men pierced the ears of the little ones, and for each piercing the parents gave away a pony to someone who was in need. The next day the dancing began, and those who were going to take part were ready, for they had been fasting and purifying themselves in the sweat lodges and praying. First their bodies were painted by the holy men. Then each would lie down beneath the tree as though he were dead, and the holy men would cut a place in his back or chest so that a strip of rawhide fastened to the top of the tree could be pushed through the flesh and tied. Then the man would get up and dance to the drums, leaning on the rawhide strip as long as he could stand the pain, or until the flesh tore loose. We smaller boys had a good time during the 2 days of dancing, for we were allowed to do almost anything to tease the people, and they had to stand it. We would gather sharp spear grass, and when a man came along without a shirt, we would stick him to see if we could make him cry out, for everybody was supposed to endure everything. Also, we made popguns out of young ash boughs and shot at the men and women to see if we could make them jump. And if they did, everybody laughed at them. The mothers carried water to their holy little ones in bladder bags, and we would make little bows and arrows so that we could hide them under our robes, so that we could steal up to the women and shoot holes in the bags. They were supposed to stand anything and could not scold us when the water spurted out. We had a good time there. Right after the sun dance was over, some of our scouts came in from the south, and the crier went round the circle and said, "The scouts have returned, and they have reported that soldiers are camping up the river. So, young warriors, take courage and get ready to meet them." While they were all getting ready, I was getting ready too, because Crazy Horse was going to lead the warriors, and I wanted to go with him. But my uncle, who thought a great deal of me, said, "Young nephew, you must not go. Look at the helpless ones. Stay home, and maybe there will be plenty of fighting right here." So the war parties went on without me. Maybe my uncle thought I was too little to do much and might get killed. Then the crier told us to break camp, and we moved over west towards the Greasy Grass and camped at the head of Spring Creek while the war parties were gone. We learned later that it was Three Stars, General Crook, who fought with our people on the Rosebud that time. He had many walking soldiers and some cavalry, and there were many Crows and Shoshone with him. They were all coming to attack us where we had the sun dance, but Crazy Horse whipped them, and they went back to Goose Creek where they all had their wagons. My friend Iron Hawk was there that day, and he can tell you how it was. Iron Hawk speaks. I am a Hunkpapa. I was 14 years old that summer, and I was a big boy. Two war parties went out, a very large one from the south end of the camp and a small one from the north end. I went with the small one, and there were only about 40 of us. The big party got there early in the morning, and when we came they had been fighting for a long while. There is a wide valley there at the bend of the river, with some bluffs and hills around it, and it looked as though people were fighting all over the place. There were Crows with the soldiers, and we began fighting with some of them. It looked as though we were getting the best of them. Then the soldiers began to advance on the other side of us, and we had to retreat. We were heading for where the big party was, but the soldiers were after us, and the Crows got braver and fought harder because of the soldiers. When we got to the bend, the Crows were right among us, and it was all mixed up fighting there. I don't know whether I killed anybody or not, but I guess I did, for I was scared and fought hard, and the way it was, you couldn't keep from killing somebody if you didn't get killed, and I am still alive. There was a Lakota with me by the name of Without a Teepee, and a big Crow pulled him right off his horse and he disappeared. Of course, me, I ran for my life because we could not fight all those Crows and the soldiers too, and I was scared. But I was not running alone. We were all running with the Crows after us. Then all at once we saw a band of cavalry coming right ahead of us, about 30 of them. I do not know how they got there. Maybe they were returning from a scouting trip. It looked bad for us. Then I heard voices crying in our language, "Take courage! This is a good day to die! Think of the children and the helpless at home!" So we all yelled, "Hoka hey!" and charged on the cavalry and began shooting them off their horses, for they turned and ran. They were running toward their big party, and I could see many people were fighting over there, but everything was all mixed up, and you could not tell what was happening. It was a pitiful, long, stretched-out battle. They fought all day. Then the Crows were on us from behind, and we turned round and charged back on them, but many soldiers were behind them coming. So we all had to run, crying, "Yay, hey," because there was not enough of us. But now I was very scared, and I ran for my life. I came to a rocky place, and my pony stepped between two stones and nearly tore his hoof off. There was a very brave Shayela by the name of Sitting Eagle. He was a friend of mine, and he had been with me in the fight. When I got off my pony to look at his hoof, a single Crow was coming after me. Then I saw my friend, the Shayela, going to meet the Crow. They fought hand to hand, and the Crow went down. I wish I had stayed with Sitting Eagle, because then I could have been first to coo that Crow. But another man did it. I ran on my foot, leading my horse, who was hopping on three legs. Then I saw smoke coming out of a deep gully where there was a creek. I went over to the smoke, and there were three Lakotas who had killed a bison were having a feast right there while all the fighting was going on over the hill. They invited me, so I sat there and ate, for I was about 14 years old, and I was always hungry. We had to watch out while we ate. One of the men took some clotted blood from the bison and put it in some raw bison hide and fastened it around my pony's hoof so that I could ride. After we'd been eating there a long time, a Lakota came up on his horse with blood and dirt all over his face, and he was angry. He said, "What are you doing here? We're fighting. All you think of is to eat. Why don't you think about the helpless ones at home? Come, make haste. We have got to stand our ground." I felt ashamed, so I got on my horse and we started. My horse could go better with his hoof tied up that way. We came to a ridge, and I could see all over the valley of the Rosebud where the fighting was going on. You could not tell who was getting whipped. It looked all mixed up. Some Crows attacked us there, and I never got to the big party that was doing